Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Jennifer Boozer. Jennifer is the owner and co-founder of Cannabama, the CBD store in Alabama. So thanks for joining us today, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, you know, usually I, want to know where someone's from, where they're based out of, but it says it right there, Cannabama. That's such a cool name.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to make sure that it was clear that we are your home for all things cannabis in Alabama, and you may not be able to get all forms of cannabis yet, but eventually we want to be the ones to offer it to you.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Amazing. So yeah, I know that there's even more restrictions in Alabama, a little bit different, and you were actually the first CBD store, you know, and aside from restrictions, it seems like there's a whole, you know, kind of self-imposed stuff, you know, just because, I mean, I lived in Dallas, a little bit different from Alabama, but just the feel is different. You know, now I'm born and raised in LA most of my life. And, you know, you don't have this kind of stigma so much. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, being the first CBD store in Alabama, kind of like how the process was, any backlash, you know, any struggles that came along with that?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's funny because, well, I was a stay-at-home mom for 17 years. And, you know, my day revolved around, you know, whether or not we had a soccer game or a football game. And, you know, the only real people I saw on a daily basis were other parents in my community. And, you know, everything is very conservative here because we are actually so far south. We're below the Bible Belt, I like to joke, because the Bible Belt's somewhere about 8 hours or 10 hours north of here. We're at the bottom. And so that, you know, we, of course, there was reefer madness, but there was also this, you know, anything that would be considered drugs, you know, alcohol, sex, anything that the church is against. And I'm a Christian. Just let me say that up front. I was raised in the church. I'm a Christian. So I'm criticizing my own people because I know that if I got one pastor in a room and could educate them properly, they would be like, you got to go, you know, get your drug addict family member into this woman's business because she can help you. Mm-hmm. And so, but yes, we were raised with reefer madness and, you know, all of the stuff that comes from being raised in a conservative Bible Belt area. And so there's like a double stigma here. And anything that, you know, might be considered in excess, and it's ironic, you know, people, they don't understand it and they think they do. And that goes both ways, because people who are heavy weed smokers think they know because they smoke a lot and they don't actually know. But yeah, it's weird. I go to football games now and people don't look me in the eye.
Wow.
They don't ask you how you are. They don't like your Facebook page. It's the people that are strangers to me that are supportive of my business, that actually patronize my business. My own community, for the most part, has nothing to do with me. And of course, I have an 18-year-old son who's a senior. I'm cool with those people in my community. It's funny, Boozer's mom sells weed, they like to joke. But there's very few people that I knew and interacted with before this that will even have anything to do with me. And that's okay, because I've met way cooler people. And I spend my days with people who are enlightened and educated, and who are helping me to change people's lives. And so I don't really have time for that nonsense. Kind of like, oh, you don't want to look me in the eye. Well, pop another Zanny and wash it down with your wine, Karen. You know what I mean?
Wow.
You can't let it bother you. It bothered me at first because I was like, you know, why are you being rude? But it doesn't bother me anymore. It's been a long 18 months. But yes, starting the first business, there was no one to teach you. There was no one to ask advice from, because you can't ask someone who's done it in California. It's not even remotely the same thing. And, you know, what do you do? And I had never had a business or even had a job. So And sometimes that made it the hardest, but also I think it gives me an advantage because I don't have any preconceived ideas about how to market or, you know, the technical things that people get hung up on. I'm just doing what I know and putting my heart out there and going with my gut and loving on people. You know, to me, education and compassion are the two most important ingredients. Business savvy, I can pay somebody to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. But it takes a lot more effort to love people enough to hear them and see them and help them no matter what. So, yeah, I mean, I've been harassed by cops, but I also have cops that come in twice a week. You get a little bit of both.
You know, everybody needs, you know, relief. And I know one of my buddies, he's a cop, and he had served a couple terms over in Iraq, Afghanistan. Yes. You know, and it's like dealing with the PTSD. And like you said, you know, it could be Karen or it could be, you know, Joe the policeman, you know, where it's like people are medicating themselves one way or another.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's like either you're going to see and you're going to look at the studies and you're going to see what's really going on and the amount of work that's put in. And, you know, there's a reason why this stuff is finally getting passed now after, you know, 100 years of prohibition, you know. So it's incredible. People have this, you know, so, and what's also fascinating is how, you know, you have to deal with the stigma in the church. And, you know, I recently had a podcast release with someone now I'd consider dear friend, which I met through the podcast. And you know, she was dealing with it from the other side. You know, she's from LA, but, you know, religious Jew. You know, Orthodox,
oh, yeah,
and the same thing, you know, so talking about, you know, the same story as you, you know, oh, let's go over to her house. She's got some good stuff, you know, she's got weed and same thing, you know, going to shul, going to the synagogue and people, you know, this and that. So it travels around. It's all over the place and it's unfortunate, but on the other hand, like you said, it's about education and re-educating and de-educating what people think, right, they know, and you know, you really, really are doing a huge service.
Yeah.
Now you're also
and some of my favorite encounters now. Uh-huh. Now that I have, I wouldn't even like pretend to guess how many hours of just talking to people that have accumulated in the last 2 years. But some of my favorite customers are the guys. It's always guys. It's always some guy that's 10 or 15 years younger than me, because I'm 41, who comes in and either is like dismissive or even they'll sometimes laugh at you and say, no, I'm a heavy weed smoker. Like, and I say, okay, I hear you. We love skeptics. Here's my proposition, just mm-hmm. so you'll know for sure that you're right or you're wrong. Try a gram, take it home. Smoke it. If you hate it, I will give you every penny back and apologize tomorrow. And they come back the next day, but they never ask for their money back. And they bring four of their buddies and they're on their Instagram live saying, this lady is the plug, you know, and it's because it's good quality. They don't know because they've never read about weed. They just always smoked it.
Yeah.
They don't understand the full scope of what all of cannabis is. And so they just dismiss it. And sometimes, you know, it's almost like there's hemp and weed working against each other when we shouldn't be, because it's all a family and they mm-hmm. both have value and they both have a place. You can't always be stoned. You know, you just can't.
Yeah.
And hemp is not inferior because you can't get stoned. Sometimes you need that same amount of relief you're looking for, and you need to not be stoned and actually have a sharper mental clarity. And so people just don't understand. And I think with the tidal wave of opiate and benzo and all the other sedative and the drugs that were pushed for the last 25, 30 years that impair you, people just have this idea that if it doesn't impair you, it has no value. And those two things, you know, make it a lot harder for people like me. I can't offer you weed. I can't. but I can offer you something that has just as much value. It's just a little different. And if you'll let me tell you why it's just as valuable and then be open to try it, you'll see. And we can use both ends of it. You know, I believe that, and I look forward to the day that I can offer people 1-to-1, 4-to-1, whatever they need. And we're not hindered by this federal legal limit and all that comes with that. But not everybody will even care about that. Some people won't ever want anything more, and that's cool too. But we shouldn't be working against each other because, you know, our experiences is with one or the other.
And you hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, we're it's kind of inoculated in this, you know, because of our own experience or whatever else, you know, that it's got to be intoxicating for it to work in terms of everything, in terms of pills, in terms of, you know, you mentioned Xanax already, you already mentioned opiates, you know, and right. you mentioned opiates, bring that up. And, you know, you have a fascinating story, a wonderful story as well, you know, coming from, you know, from opiates and, you know, now owning your own CBD store. Can you kind of talk about that?
Sure. In a nutshell, for time's sake, when I was 25, I gave birth to my second son, and in the process of giving birth to him, my uterus and bladder ruptured, and I almost bled to death, and my son was born full term and should have been healthy, but he was brain dead and lived on life support until the fifth day, and I had to, at 25, remove my son from life support and let him die. And I spent a long time wishing I had died. But once I was physically starting to recover from that, I discovered how opiates not only helped you cope with the incredible amount of pain I was in, but the grief and the pain, the emotional pain, it made me numb all over. And so over the course of, you know, and in 2003, there was no opioid epidemic. You know, I had no idea what I was doing to myself because I didn't know you could be a drug addict and get your dealer be your doctor. I had no idea.
Well, there definitely was. It just wasn't, you know, billion-dollar lawsuits like it is now, you know, so.
Right, right.
They were making that money. Right. That was, yeah, exactly. That was.
Yeah, I was like an OG opiate addict, you know, back in the day. I was one of the pioneers, sadly, because I was really good at it. And I never did street drugs, you know. I bought pills from people, but I never did, you know, I never smoked anything. I never shot anything up. I never snorted anything. You know, I didn't even drink, ironically, because my last name is Boozer. But I did not do any of those things. I was not partying. I just could not bear the pain I was in and the anger. Oh, my gosh, because what happened to us was done to us and completely avoidable. And that's a whole nother podcast. But anyway, so I spent 10 years in this terrible downward spiral and spent the last few years before I got clean wishing I was dead. I would not kill myself because I didn't want my children to have to carry that, you know, if I died, that's one thing. But if I did it on purpose, that's a whole nother level of messed up. And so, but I fantasized about getting hit by a bus, you know, because then I could die and no one would be mad at me. And it got to the point my husband was finally like, okay, this enough is enough. I need you to, you know, get some help or go live with your mama. And I wasn't going to live with my mama. So I decided to quit, and it was terrifying. I had wanted to quit actually, but when you've been in it long enough that you're convinced, and having gone through withdrawal before, that's going to be my life and I can't do that. It's the fear that keeps you using. And, but I did. And about 3 weeks later, God delivered me from that craving, from that longing, from that struggle. And I didn't have the psychological battle anymore. I was left with the consequences of having treated myself like a garbage can, and some of it will never be recoverable, but I started getting my life back, and but I still had migraines and arthritis. I still had plantar fasciitis. I still had anxiety, depression. And now, for the first time, I'm lucid. And all that grief I was trying to avoid was still there. And then you had 10 years of ridiculous amounts of pain and damage on top of it. But you don't have a choice but to face it. And it's overwhelming. So I couldn't sleep. You know, I had insomnia from the minute he died. And a friend of mine, I actually tried looking at CBD at someone's suggestion. And like anyone else, I said, oh, I can't use that. That's weed. I'm in recovery. And it's expensive. Hell no, you know? But a friend of mine who I trust more than anything came to me, and she had come to my house for my 3-year clean anniversary, and I had just had surgery. So for the first time in 3 years, I had had some opiates and I didn't struggle with it, but it kicked that with that mild withdrawal in after having been in the hospital and then having pain medicine for 8 days, that mild withdrawal to remind me that, hey, this is still something that you cannot have because, you know, you're going to suffer for it. And it's fortunate, and God is good, because I would not have had the same passion about it that I have if I hadn't been in that mild state of withdrawal and still trying to recover from surgery when I tried it, because it immediately took that away. And the thing that I got out of it was, A, this is better than the morphine that they gave me. B, why does no one know this? Because this is going to turn recovery on its head. And it was like a fire was lit in me that just, you know, some days I wonder if it's going to consume me, because I'm still going like the Energizer Bunny 2 years later. But I am now in a position where I can be, I can help facilitate other people not having to go through what I went through, or breaking free from what they're suffering from that I know very intimately for myself. And I knew that I was not going to stay at home with my kids and just hide from the world anymore. This was my calling. I knew it from the minute I felt the effects. This was going to be a mission for me. And it's been just 110% ever since. Crazy. In the best and some of the worst ways possible.
No, I mean, first and foremost, that is an, you know, incredible story. And thank you for sharing that with me and with our listeners. And, you know, hopefully, you know, inspiring someone out there. But that is absolutely devastating, you know, what you went through and the pain. And no one should have to go through that. Definitely not.
No, it's to me, I mean, because I've been through other types of deaths before, but there's something so unnatural about burying your child. That's the one thing I know there's a 50-50 chance I'm going to bury my husband. I know I'm going to bury my parents. I've already buried one. Mm. I may bury one of my siblings. I don't know. But you shouldn't ever have to bury your child. And it's just the most unfair thing. And a lot of people don't ever get over it. It just consumes them. And there is still a part of me that will never, ever, ever be the same. But I have two living children, and they deserve more. And I deserve more. And I have something to give, and I can't sit around feeling sorry for myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I only ever accomplished what I saw in the last 7 to 10 days, it would have all been worth it. Mm-hmm. So we see miracles every day, much to the FDA's dismay.
Well, that's for sure. That's for sure. And that, you know, that's also a sad thing, you know. And another thing, you know, congratulations on your recovery, on being sober for 5 years, you know, clean for five years. That is absolutely incredible. And it's no small feat, and I know it wasn't easy. You know, I've also been in recovery for not an NA or, you know, for an AA, any of those kind of things. But what I will say is that, you know, so you mentioned something like, well, I have my family. Oh, it doesn't matter. You know, this thing, you know, this experience was consuming you. Obviously, it was devastating. Mm-hmm. And you're numbing yourself with the opiates and, you know, and like you said, more ways than one, in any way possible to deal with.
Right. And you numb the pain, but you also numb the joy, and you numb the love, and you numb the experience and the connection with people, mm-hmm. and you numb everything.
The growth, you know, and everything that comes out of it. And it just puts our life on standstill for that amount of time, you know, and until.
Yeah, and you're lucky if you don't accidentally kill yourself and give up the chance to actually have something, you know. And but sometimes for me it was anger and bitterness and the inability to cope with the injustice of this was done to us. And yeah, we won some lawsuits over it, but what does that matter? Mm-hmm. It still hurts. He's still gone. They still went on with their lives. Mm-hmm. And, but what is, you know, I had to get to a place where I could let that go so I could move on and have a life. Cause I was the only one suffering for it. No one, you know, and that's a whole, that in itself, forgiveness and being able to let things go. If you can't, it will, you know, what they say about bitterness, you know, unforgiveness means it's like taking poison and hoping the other person dies. You know, it's true. It's absolutely true because it will eat you alive.
Yeah. And forgiveness, you know, talking about forgiveness, you know, you talk about growing up in the church, talking about, you know, now you bring up God multiple times in the conversation, and it's like, you know, forgiving God, you know, and forgiving.
Right. Which is crazy. It's crazy. Who am I to be mad at God?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Who am I? And when I think about that, it makes me I'm a little bit ashamed of it. You know, that's one of the things I can't dwell on it because I'm not going to live in shame. I refuse.
Yeah.
But I can regret and I can take ownership and all that, but I don't have to be ashamed because that's not how I feel anymore. And that's not who I am. But yes, when I was lucid enough, because when you're impaired, you're not thinking straight, you know, it's like, really? You're mad at God? Okay. Yeah. Because who are you?
Yeah. I mean, this is an ongoing question, I think, with people all the time. And like you said, you know, it's this place and having that awareness, having that, being able to have that conversation. And that's a part of recovery. You know, making amends with people and making amends with our higher power as well. And
Well, and I had the unique experience. Most people, you know, they have no patience for a drug addict. You know, why can't you just stop? All that good stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't have that. I had people say straight to my face, I don't blame you. I would probably do drugs too because of what I had been through. Because even some people can't even handle hearing about it. When it happened, I had friends that were my very best, closest friends that did not come around for a long time because they couldn't handle it. So, and it was like, you're not in it. Can I get, you know, a card? I need a friend. But it's so difficult for people to even consider going through it that they're like, dude, I would have done drugs too, man. Which is validating. And like I said, when you're impaired, you can't think clearly and logically. And when you're looking for ways to justify your behavior, well, I got all these people's endorsements. So, you know, they don't blame me. Why are you mad? So it's a unique thing. I have people say that now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, there's no excuse. There is no excuse. And if I don't have an excuse, you don't have an excuse, boo, because you know, no, there is no excuse.
Yeah, it's different levels of awareness I think we have at certain times and, you know, different paths that we have. And you also mentioned something there, you know, you brought up the FDA and, you know, and how, so, you know, that's obviously a big topic. You know, right now we're speaking
always
in mid-December. And the podcast probably won't come out until, you know, early next year, 2020, coming up very soon.
Right.
But, you know, just this week, 15 institutions there got letters of warning.
Yes.
Warning letters saying.
Yeah, you're always holding your breath like, oh, God, let me look at the list because I have 30 brands on the wall.
Yeah.
And none of mine were on there. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a crazy, crazy place to navigate through, that's for sure.
Well, one of the bigger names on the list is the only other, I don't know, they're all individually owned, but the other one was a franchise that is very prominent now. They were non-existent a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And between that and now, there's 24 or 25 now. And I was shocked. I mean, I get it because I've seen it.
Those are the ones cutting the corners, you know, if you're scaling that fast.
Exactly. Those are the ones that cannot answer basic questions. You know, yeah, people that make my job harder. Yeah.
And
every time someone goes into a quote-unquote CBD store and gets an inferior product or gets a great product but gets reamed by the price or gets a great product at a good price but isn't told how to properly use it and have bad experiences, makes them 100 times less likely to come into my business and let me try to help them because they write it off. Boom, it's garbage. So it does make it harder. And sometimes the industry is its own worst enemy.
100%. And, you know, so the whole thing is, you know, we're talking about opiates, we're talking about, you know, Xanax, anxiety, and yet there's only one, approved product for epilepsy. That's it. And you see people coming in and out. You've seen the effect that it's had on you. We have, you know, in Israel, all kinds of research and around the world as well. Where are we going? You know, how can we, or is it just playing the waiting game at this point?
I realize that I don't even know if it's just purely scientific, but in the scientific medical governmental community, the only thing that anyone finds valid is, you know, these clinical trials done in a controlled environment and all that. And I love that most, you know, anyone who's against letting people make their own choice will say is there's no research. Yes, there is.
There's a lot of research.
Yes, there is. There's research paid for by the very same government that's done in another country. Mm-hmm. All that research is paid for by the U.S. Mm-hmm. And yet they're claiming there's no research because they're not ready to let go of the guaranteed buck. But what's crazy is, and I've seen this in its own form in my state, if you'll consider the possibilities of what the alternative is, you can still make tons of money if that's what you're worried about and actually do what's best for the people who trust you to know what's best for them. And if I really don't understand why anybody who's been alive and has eyeballs and ears and brain cells to rub together thinks that anyone in those institutions has anyone's best interest at heart. But they do. We've been conditioned.
Yeah, we're supposed to believe that. Obviously, why would the government want to do anything against us? Why would the FDA not want to be on our side? Tell me why, but you know, and everybody is just
right. Why would the FDA approve the OxyContin that almost killed me?
Yeah.
And robbed me of everything I had. And the doctors that were giving it to me are in federal prison, by the way. There's an American Greed episode about them. And that happened about 6 months after I got clean. But yeah, I mean, why is it acceptable for people to take pharmaceutical grade opiate, you know, in the body? It's the same as heroin. And so that's acceptable, but this, it's not even intoxicating, but this isn't. It's crazy. And it always comes down to the fact that you cannot own something, patent something, or monopolize something that was here long before you and that was here before human beings even realized what they were eating and using to feed livestock and as medicine, you know? And if you take that, I mean, all medicine is synthesized chemicals that mimic plants. That's all it is. But you can own something that's, you know, that's made in a lab. You can't own something that grows wild in nature. And that's what it comes down to.
Comes down to control, comes down to the almighty dollar, definitely. You mentioned, you know, obviously we're talking about so many deep concepts and, you know, you came in, you know, a couple of years ago, introduced to this and, you know, it's obviously a very nuanced industry, you know, and, you know, saying that you haven't owned a business and, you know, you have a successful business there. So, you know, how did you, who taught you the ins and outs? Where'd you find, you know, the
I taught myself.
Was there a mentor?
I taught myself. There's no one to teach. I mean, you have to go out there and find this research. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out how to interpret it. fortunately, I have enough, you know, I was an opiate addict, not addicted to something that would give me neurological damage. So I'm just as smart as I was before. I was impaired all the time. And I have, don't ask me to organize your closet or balance your checkbook, but I can teach. I can retain information, understand it, and then teach it however the person in front of me best learns. And that's something I'm good at. And I've discovered that since I discovered what CBD is. And because I was so altered, this was a life-changing experience. And at first I couldn't really articulate why. And so no one was buying the concept of my own grandmother said I was using it as an excuse to smoke weed, you know? Yeah, it's like, hey, I know I'm a recovering addict and all, but here's this cannabis. And they're like, really? Is it? So I knew that if I could not tell them every answer to every question, they were never going to hear, which meant they were never going to even consider or try it. And I knew it would change their life. And I just had to get them to where they would consider trying it. And once they did, I knew that was all that would be necessary. Mm-hmm. And so I would spend 10, 12 hours a day sometimes reading and watching videos and talking to people. I've gone to, you know, conventions and, you know, just cramming as much as I could. And then, you know, someone would say, well, I have this going on and I'd never even heard of it. I don't know what causes it or anything. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Give me 10 minutes. I'll call you back. And I would learn about something I have never dealt with. And here's the root causes. Here's what happens. Okay. Yes. It matches these things. So I think it would help you. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, it would give you your immune system and your system some balance to help you deal with it. And that is important. You need to know more than just what it is, but you have to be able to articulate at any given time what it is, what it does, how it works, and how to use it. Those you can't teach one, two, or three of those things. You have to teach them all. And you can't hesitate. You can't be worried what your neighbors are going to think, because if you're not confident, they're not going to come in your store. If you are scared you're going to get raided, they're scared you're going to get raided. You know, I'm like, arrest me, please. That's free publicity, because I know what the law says. We can go there. You know, my lawyer hates it because he's like, please, no, don't be the one. And I'm like, why? Who's going to do it? Yeah, Alabama, don't know.
All PR is good PR, you know, so.
I'm like, you know what? If it happens, I ask him, can I go to prison? No, you cannot. Well, then that's fine. So come bail me out and have some reporters ready and let's do this, you know? I'm like, I've made enough friends now that would support me at least to say, yeah, what she said. And I think because I was out there, I mean, I opened 4 months before the new farm bill. Mm-hmm. And no one else wanted to put it out there. And I was like, you know what, whatever happens, happens, but I got to give it a shot. And there's people suffering right now today that may not even be here by the time it's safe. And it may never be safe, so why wait?
Yeah. Well, you're definitely paving the way and helping a lot of people, and that's for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's this whole other stigma. You know, I've been in cannabis, quote, industry or business, or call it what you will. Like, we call it the traditional market, you know, over here.
Right.
Calicam, but, you know, dank discussions. But, you know, it's there's this whole other idea where people aren't allowed to be new in the industry. You know, people aren't allowed, you have
right.
to have
oh, I know.
10, 15, 20 years in the industry. You have to come from the
How nice for you. You had that opportunity so much longer ago than me. Yes.
Yeah. You know, so exactly. So it's, you know, it's like I heard someone recently saying, oh, MJ BizCon, that's the newbies. And it's like, come on, man, this is ridiculous, because look at you, you came here.
What are you afraid of?
17 years as a, you know, quote, soccer mom, and you know, coming from, you know, from devastating experience to being, you know, an addict now in recovery. and having a business where someone wasn't, like you said, you took the stand, you did it when people were still iffy, oh, is new bill, what's it going to say, this, that, the other thing, and you went and you did it. And now look, so, you know, it's, to me, it's, you know, really non sequitur when people are talking about that kind of new in the industry, because the industry is growing right now. And like you said, what are you scared of? You know, it's, we need more people like you as opposed to, you know, other people that, that I meet and I talk to.
Right. Well, I am new. I am new. People, you know? And if you have 15 years experience and I am no threat to your business, why wouldn't you want to see people in Alabama be enlightened? Why isn't that a boon for the entire industry? Why isn't that a feather in the cap of the people? Because, you know, we've been over here thinking y'all are all, you know, stoners and hippies.
We're a bunch of stoners. We're a bunch of potheads, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Why wouldn't you be thrilled? Why wouldn't you be thrilled that the hillbillies are on board?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
rednecks
we
are here.
We fought for this. We fought for this.
Exactly. This is what you wanted.
16
yes.
saying, man, when we, you know, there's going to be legal someday. It's going to happen in our lifetime. And some of my friends are like, you're crazy, man. Not going to happen. I'm like, it's going to happen. You know,
yeah.
And now here we are fighting for it.
I've had some interesting, I'm in some groups of, you know, empowering women in cannabis kind of things. And when you try to kind of, you know, it's like jumping into a jump rope. You're like, okay. Oh, I know the answer to that. Or I have that same question. Let me step in. And I've had some pretty rude interactions. And it's very interesting because I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. What is it about me that doesn't qualify me to be part of this conversation? And it's because they've never heard of me, so I must not be important enough. And I'm like, yes, but did you bother to look? Did you bother to look? Because if you want to know about me, I mean, how hard was it for you to sort of gauge who I am? What I'm either good or not at, how many people take me seriously, how successful my business might be, because you've never seen my sales figures, you don't know for sure. But looking at what's public, do I seem like a drooling idiot who can't possibly have an idea? I just don't think so. But most people don't take the time to even look or even consider or hear you out. And that happened to me earlier this morning, in fact. And I'm like, you know, this isn't very empowering. I got to go.
Yeah, and definitely. And, you know, that's
yeah. the thing. As we... At one point, remember, you were the new guy.
Yeah,
and I'm not really new compared, as far as what I'm doing. I'm sort of an OG compared to the ones that have been in business 3 months. Mm-hmm. You know, no, I was the only business in the southern two-thirds of Alabama for 8 months. That's a long time, considering that most people waited until, you know, if you consider December 2018 is when most people believe that it finally became legal, which is totally false. But anyway, I was already doing my thing. So, and you had to scramble and put yours together and get it going. So I'm one of the older ones, you know, I'm one of the only businesses that's got more than a year. So I'm not even new, you know,
yeah.
I'm one of the ones that had to learn the hard way, everything. So, you know, and I don't know, I'm married to an accountant, thank God. So he does organize things well and, remember to pay the taxes on time and accurately. But you know, I'm never going to claim to be an expert. I'm never going to claim to be a savvy business person. I am definitely the opposite of that. But to me, it's not a business first. It's a business last. It's a business because I don't personally have enough money to give it away or pay the staff and all the other things that are required to make it readily available across the board for all of the people's needs around me. And so I have to charge money for it. But if I did have that kind of money, you'd see me riding around in a, you know, ice cream truck, throwing it out the window, because everyone should have it. Everyone should have it in their backyard and be able to do whatever they want with it. So I don't know. I get dismissed for a lot of reasons, and that's okay, because it bothered me for a long time, and now I'm starting to see where I think I'm okay with you underestimating me. That just makes the impact that much bigger.
You know, I was always taught being underestimated is a good thing, you know, definitely.
You know, yeah, it's frustrating when it works against you, but the reward is always much, much better.
Definitely. And, you know, getting back, you know, you're talking about marketing. You don't necessarily look the bill of what everybody thinks.
Well, yes, I was saying we haven't all started from a healthy place. Mm-hmm. You know, I know from my husband, you know, I was raised in Louisiana where you eat carbs with everything. And we were poor. And so food, you know, getting to eat something that was, you know, getting to have soda or, you know, anything that's terrible for you was given as a reward. And it raises you to see food differently. And my husband was raised in a way that you didn't have a sugary cereal is not breakfast, you know? And so for it's easier for him because the way he was raised with eating the right things, and his parents were naturopathic, you know, my dad was an addict. And so we were raised differently, and it's much harder for someone to deprogram themselves, but it shouldn't matter that, you know, you see me as not fit, and that cancels me out in your mind, but you don't know where I was a year ago. Uh-huh. And that where I am now is a huge improvement, and that's okay. I'm not there yet, but hey, let me take somebody else along the journey and let that change over time, show them that, hey, it took her a long time, and if it takes me a long time, that's okay. As opposed to me being perfect looking and telling you, oh, it's so easy, and it's not easy. And people get defeated and say, well, that's just not for me, and they give up. Okay. So there's value sometimes, more value in hearing it from someone who doesn't look fit and healthy than it does from someone who is, you know, already at the destination or never, you know, or started at the destination. So it's rude to say that I don't have anything to contribute because I'm not at the destination yet. You know, the journey is what matters. And it takes a lot more courage to show the process and how hard it is and how it's not easy and it's not simple, and you get defeated and you don't get what you want fast enough, and you stumble and fall and you get back up. That's more impactful to me than waiting until you're perfect to say, here's how easy it is, because it gives people a false expectation and makes them feel like there's something wrong with them and they should just give up. So, you know, whatever.
You know, it's always, you know, as we say, progress over perfection.
Right.
Aside from that, it's, you know, there's really no place for that in the workplace.
Right.
Anymore. You know, we've seen Mad Men, you know, not the company, but the, another thing, but, you know, the TV show.
I was just going to say, it's funny you say that, because I was just reading about that last night.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. That, like you said, that's a whole other podcast in and of itself as well. Now, you know, being, you know, you've talked about so many different things, you know, being the first CBD store in Alabama, having to overcome, you know, not having a, you know, business background, the different things that we mentioned. Now, what has been the biggest obstacle your business has faced, Cannabama? You know, what's been the biggest business and how have you been able to overcome it?
On the strictly business end of it, money, merchant services. It took me 3 attempts to be able to get a checking account, not merchant services.
I'm surprised it only took you 3 attempts.
Will you hold my money for me? Yes. The first place that I went to was the bank we have used personally for 15 years and have bought 2 homes through. And, the higher ups compared my business to a strip club, and I'm still trying to figure out why. And I guess the only thing that makes sense to me is maybe it's if they consider you high risk, that there's a higher probability of money laundering. I'm not sure, because there's no polls. There's no pasties. It is not there's no alcohol. You know, there's no lap dancing. Quite the opposite. So, and you have to go, oh, okay, well, and you know, now I know if they could see my bank account, they'd probably feel stupid. But it took me 3 tries just to get a checking account. And then I'm on my 4th merchant processor.
It's only been 4, actually.
Well, yeah, I finally got approved and set up with Elavon, and 6 weeks later, you know, for whatever reason, somebody got in trouble or whatever, and they ditched everybody. And it was like, okay, now the other banks aren't even going to entertain it. I actually had ATM machines delivered, and I didn't want to go there, but it was the only way I was going to be able to take people's money. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, my current bank saved me from having to do that, but they only did brick and mortar. And so I'm just now, last week, have an online store. I didn't want to start something that I could not, that I would have to struggle keeping active, and, you know, offer people something and then, oh, wait, I can't do it for 2 weeks. I didn't want to deal with that inconsistency. So, and we were so busy in the store that I didn't think that I needed that anyway, and I thought it would detract from what we were doing. And honestly, what sets my business apart is the one-on-one face-to-face, and you just can't get that from an online store. If you know what you're looking for and you know how to vet a brand and you know what a quality product is, you don't need a face-to-face. But no one here even knows. I asked just 2 days ago. With all the CBD out there everywhere, I had a lady at an event that I was doing come up and ask me what these products were, and she had never even heard of the term CBD. And I was floored that people still are that far removed from it, because it's all anybody talks about. You know, here locally, I've been on local news channels, you know, whole stories, and I've had magazine articles written and newspaper articles, and I advertise like crazy. I have a radio show, and there are still people who've never heard those 3 letters put together. Okay. And you have to start from scratch. And so that, you know, it may not always be that brick and mortar is necessary, and it may go the way of the shopping mall. But right now, I think in places like Alabama, and other states that have never even had any type of marijuana product or any kind of cannabis, it's necessary, because people are afraid. They're, you know, people are afraid of what they don't understand, and or what they think they understand that is wrong. And the face-to-face experience, when you walk into my store, you know, and if you have 5 questions or 500 questions, we will sit with you for 2 hours. 5 hours, whatever it takes. We teach classes, you know. I started teaching classes before I even had product delivered to sell, because I wanted people to be ready when it came, to start understanding and being willing to try. And we do things like single serving samples, because it's a huge leap to people to spend the kind of money that you have to spend on a quality CBD product for something so tiny.
That's the whole thing, and, you know, people going into gas stations and saying, oh, it didn't work.
Oh, God, yes.
We don't need to get into that, but.
Nope. Yeah, that is, wow. Uh-huh.
Definitely, so. Very good.
Yeah, so, you know. But banking, yes. And then, as far as, you know, reaching the public, just that, you know, the ignorance that is not anyone's fault. They either don't know anything about it, or they think they do and it's wrong. And like I said earlier, even with people who are heavy weed smokers, they think they know because they've interacted with it for so long, but they don't read about it. They don't read studies, and they don't know. They're like, it's what? Hemp? What's hemp? I'm like, oh, but you're a connoisseur, right? Exactly. So yeah, the lack of good information and stigma, and then the financial part. Yeah, I can't get loans at the bank. I have fantastic sales. I have a good credit score. I've been in business longer than most, and I still can't even get a bank to consider me because the word cannabis cancels out anything good that they might see. So it is a challenge. It's hard, even, you know, with the type of sales I do every month, it's hard to move forward in a really big way when you have to save up after you've paid your employees and all that good stuff. And I, when I can, keep my margin as low as possible and give discounts and donate products. You know, I could have a lot more in my savings, but then a lot of people would have not gotten the help they need, and that's okay with me.
Yeah.
You know, I, you know, after 17 years of not working, I'm not rich, but I didn't need a job to pay the light bill. And so if nothing else, it's okay with me to not pay myself. You know, if I am getting to do the kind of thing I want to do, which is help others. And lots of businesses in this industry say that, and very few actually mean it. And that's sad.
Well, definitely the education is a big thing. You know, we talk about that all the time, definitely. And like you said, that's right. What you're passionate about. So definitely, you know, and you're got the radio show and right. Doing a lot there to get that out there. So excited to see.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of people. It's funny. There's lots of people, especially older people, who listen for months, and I don't get very much feedback. I often wonder, is anybody listening? Because people are so afraid that their neighbor will see that they liked something on Facebook. So, you know, I don't get a lot of feedback on the radio show, but I'll have someone come in, and by the time they come in, they're convinced, and they say, oh, I've been listening to your radio show since June. What? What took you so long? But they just wanted to make sure. I guess, I don't know what they were waiting for, but, you know, I get turned down by people who own real estate. It is so difficult to even get a lease on property to open a store, a new location. And thankfully, I opened a new location in the end of September. And thankfully, I found someone who was willing to rent to me. And when I went to meet him, he said, I'm a big fan. I listened to your show. And I was like, thank God.
Nice.
Because nobody else will even give you the time of day. They're like, yeah, no, we don't want that. So, you know, I enjoy being able to face those challenges, and I am sure enough and passionate enough to take those hits and not get discouraged and quit, because somebody has to do that. Because I know eventually people will be enlightened and they will go, man, I wish I had realized sooner. And if it makes it easier for the ones who come behind me, then hey, thus, let's go. Let's do it. Let's do it together. You know, there's lots and lots of people still suffering and still in the dark. And I'm not here to mess around.
We have a long way to go, but happy you're there. And, you know, now we talked Absolutely. About the challenges. You know, tell me about, you know, I ask, you know, every business owner, entrepreneur that I meet, you know, how do you define success then? You know, what does success look like for you?
Success is people coming back to me and saying, thank you. You gave me my wife back. Yeah. You changed my life. I came in here afraid to hope. And now, you know, I can go back to living. I mean, you know, I can't be fully compliant and give you specific examples. But to see people come in transformed, I mean, honestly, I've stood in front of people who were in such obvious distress or discomfort or whatever the compliant words are, and watched them change in front of my eyes, and their eyes light up and they tear up and they are like, how is this not, you know, how do we not know this? This is so simple. It's so effective. It's so good. And there's no downside. Why? And that to me, if I could, man, bottle that I tell people that's my drug of choice now, because I could never give it up. You'd have to take it from my cold, dead hands, because it's the most gratifying thing in the world. It's the hardest thing I've ever done outside of burying my son. Oh. It is the hardest thing I've ever done, but it is the most satisfying and rewarding thing. And that's what gets me up out of bed every morning when I'm so tired I can hardly breathe. Because, hey, who knows what I'm going to hear or see or get to do today. That is how I measure success. Also, I can, when I tell people what my monthly sales are, they see me as successful. But that to me is the bonus, you know, that just means I have what I need to continue doing it. But, you know, I am good at what I do. I'm not good at a lot of things, and I am the first to admit it. I try to be very self-aware, especially because I have an addictive history. You know, I try to be honest with myself. And like I said earlier, I know what I'm good at and what I'm not good at, and I happen to be good at this.
And you said it, you know, self. I was going to say that you're so self-aware, you know, I think that comes into with the recovery, you know, or, you know, or anything else, but definitely. And like you said, it's a bonus. The main thing is helping people. That's what we're passionate about here. And the people right. who are passionate about it, those are the ones who are going to stick. They're the ones who are going to last right. long term. They're the ones who are coming in for cash grab. We're seeing what's going on with them. They're getting weeded out by their own greed. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, you wouldn't believe sometimes being the first one and being successful is what makes people just absolutely despise you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm 40. I know there are people that suck just because they do. But having been at home most of my adult life and not even dealing with bosses and coworkers, I didn't realize how vicious and horrible people can be. And just because they want what you have and they're willing to take it, no matter who it hurts.
The worst, but we're cleaning this industry up one, you know, day by day.
So right.
That's what we're trying to do.
Right. Yeah. The bubble will burst and we'll be able to see, you know, some of us will still be here because we were doing it the way that it should be done, you know?
100%. Well, you know, Jennifer, I really appreciate it. You know, as we close, I want to give you the mm-hmm. chance here to talk about, you know, Cannabama. How can people get in contact with you? You know, where can they find your radio show and learn more about Cannabama?
Well, probably the easiest place to find me is at cannabama.com. That's CannaBama. And my radio show, you can find in the menu. It's called Sweet Home Cannabama. And all of the episodes that I have done are on there, and you can listen to them as a podcast. I think you can find me on my podcast on some of the other streaming apps. But if you go to the website, we're there. There's some video that you can listen to parts of my story and see my staff, you know, even inside of my stores, do a little reading about us. My products are there. We do have an online store. And then, of course, if you're traveling to the Redneck Riviera, which is Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, and the Panhandle of Florida, you have to pass through the tunnel on I-10 in Mobile. And one of my stores is a few blocks from there. So we're in downtown Mobile, and then on the opposite side of town, close to the Mississippi line. And we have two beautiful stores. I have 9 staff members that I absolutely adore, and they love it like I do. And, you know, I'm a little bit of everywhere.
Incredible. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much again for your time. Good luck You know, the rest of 2020 now are going to be here, and this whole decade and beyond. Thank you so much.
Yes, and I have some plans. I always have plans.
Amazing. I can't wait to hear more. That's for sure.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com, that's C-A-L-A-C-A-N-N.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.